America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon. A little bit after 3 o'clock, and that means it is time for the Guy James Show. And welcome. Welcome to everybody along with us this afternoon. Glad to have you with us today. Always very appreciative of our great audience, all of our folks that we correspond with and hear from, my God, especially all over the world. It's really an odd phenomenon is taking place. We are hearing from so many people right now in Europe. I don't know. I think I know what it is. I think I know what the reason is. Their newfound resurgence of interest in American politics. I think it's fear. And I guess I can't blame them, but I hear from so many people from England, from France, not too many from Spain ever, but Italy, Germany, the Scandinavian countries, throughout the Scandinavian countries, we hear from them quite a lot, even Greece, and of course, other places around the world as well. So very interesting. When I made the plea last week to asking whoever is listening to the program to please send me an email and let me know where it is and how it is you're listening to the program, where it be on an archive at whiterosesociety.org or a podcast or live at theguyjamesshow.com. Love to know that. Any of you tuning in for the first time or today, we hope you'll do that. Send us an email at guyjames.com and let us know that information. Helps us keep track of where you are, just like the American government, you know. We need to know who you are, where you are, so we can keep an eye on you. Yes, that's right. Many things in the news today. Another interesting weekend. Oh, gosh. Wasn't that terrible, the horse race on Saturday? I love animals, and that poor horse, the heart that those horses have to go out and try and run. And my gosh, I hope that horse pulls through and just can live his life out happy in the pasture fields. That's all it would ever be, but that'll be good enough. Just hope it pulls through. Doggone it, it's always sad to see a tremendous animal like that go down. One of God's most beautiful creations, those beautiful thoroughbred horses. I like to watch them race, and it's so sad that their legs are so very vulnerable to that sort of thing. New hurricane forecast. Those of us who live where we do here in Southwest Florida find the hurricane forecast somewhat interesting, as does the insurance companies. My word, the insurance. We've mentioned on the program here before. We think now that we probably have our own insurance problem matter settled here, and it's going to be about 3.5 times what it was last year. Going to force a lot of people out, very, very many people. On a fixed income, just going to force them right out of the area here, and it's a doggone shame. It's If there's another bad hurricane season, I'd hate to see where the insurance rates would go. And you know, the bad thing is it's coming off of record insurance rates for insurance companies around the country. So I don't know what the answer is. I'm not smart enough to know that. But we see where they're not predicting quite as active a hurricane season as last year, but nonetheless still far more than average. How many of you saw that little clip of Saddam and his defense counsel in court this morning? Those people got a bit animated. Gee whiz, she took her judicial robe off and threw it on the floor and was yelling at him, take your hands off her. It was quite a scene. Quite a scene. Reminds me of Judge Ito and some of those. Oh, yeah. We saw General Franks. We'll comment on that a little bit later, giving a speech to the NRA folks. Quite appropriate there. Hey, I did a little research. Our guest last Friday, Charlene, told us about her work down in with the Katrina aftermath, and we were talking about those trailers down there. There are some 10,000 of those trailers. Most of them are, I think, around 32-footers sitting up in Arkansas right now. And 5,000 of them, from what we see, are going to stay where they're at in Hope, Arkansas, no matter what, saying they might be needed for the 2006 hurricane season. Charlene mentioned that those trailers, by the time it's all said and done, the moving expense and getting them ready and all that, are upwards of $70,000 a piece. American taxpayers are putting in those things. Talked to a friend of mine who is a manufacturer of trailers up in Indiana and said at best the 32-foot trailer like that production cost $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, right in that neighborhood. I guess somebody's making a buck or two off of those. I do want to remind everybody that the great investigative reporter, the very best investigative reporter in my humble opinion, Greg Palast is going to be with us tomorrow talking about his new book, Armed Madhouse, Who's Afraid of Osama Wolf, and China Floats, Bush Sinks, The Scheme to Seal 2008 Election, and No Child's Behind Left, and other dispatches from the front lines of the class war. Quite a book. I've been looking over it, and very, very interesting book. He's a great investigative journalist, and he writes with, he's got a comedic flair to him, which makes his books very, very easy and fun to read as well. So we're looking forward to have Greg Palast on tomorrow along with us. Karl Rove, no Fitzmas today, no Fitzmas last Friday. Of course, there wouldn't be any today. I think the grand jury meets on, Wednesday and Friday. What do you think? 866, by the way, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. It's starting to look kind of grim, I think, for an indictment for Karl Rove. As much as most of us wanted that truth out story to be true, Jason Leopold's story, it's starting to fade. I don't think there's any question that it's starting to fade away. And I'm sad to see that, very sad to see that. I contacted everybody I know in Washington over that situation. And the scuttlebutt around town, as I mentioned on my post on Democratic Underground today, it's just not there. Normally, Washington, the cocktail circuit's one step ahead of everybody, usually one step ahead of the press with what's going to happen in the news, and there is nothing stirring on this Rove indictment story. So I'm still keeping my fingers crossed. I still have hope for it, but I must admit they're beginning to fade. So an interesting tidbit in the news today about new mortgages. You know, you talk about scum-sucking leeches. Now they're going to offer 50-year mortgages. Yes, sir. 50-year mortgages. Why not when you're born from now on? They just, take your little hand and sign on the dotted line there, and throughout your life you can just pay the bank all of the money that you get. They'll give you some cracker box house to live in and call it yours, but in fact all you'll be doing is paying the interest on it for 50 years. You'll never never get any equity in it. 50-year mortgages. And the banks, we're gonna talk about MBNA just a little bit later. The blood-sucking credit card companies. Are they taking advantage of the situation right now or what? You know, we've seen these documents come to light recently where they're actually happy that so many people are paying a little bit late, a day late, a two-day late, and getting the $29, $39 charges, and then they're jacking their interest rates up to from the introductory 0 or 2 or 5 or 7% or whatever it was up to 28%. You know, at other times in history, these people would have been arrested for being loan sharks. They would. You stop and look back through history, back in the ghettos and all the places around where the mobs, where the mafia and all those people operated loan sharking deals in the big cities and the inner cities. What's the difference between them and MBNA and many of these big banks charging 28% interest on a credit card and $29 and $39 charges for being a day or 2 days late, or raising the interest rate on you if you were late paying some other bill, not their credit card bill, or some other bill. They find out you were a couple of days late on your house payment or your car payment. They'll jack up your credit card payment if they find out about it. Has the game been rigged in their favor or what? And you know how it got that way? You guessed it. Our legislators voted to let them do it. And now the ball's in their court. They can do any damn thing they want to with it. They can rob you blind. They are robbing you blind. They will continue to rob you blind. And they'll find even more inventive ways to rob you blind. And once again, my thanks and my congratulations to all the senators, particularly the Democrats who voted for the bankruptcy bill. Lousy, no-good bastards that you are, every single one of you that voted for that. I don't care. And my Democratic friends who want to holler at me for getting mad at one of our legislators for over one issue, that one issue was a lulu, let me tell you. That one took a lot of people down the tubes. I will never forgive any Democrat that voted for that bankruptcy bill. Never. I will not back any Democrat that voted for that bankruptcy bill for president. Never. I have principles. And that bill is one of those principles that you do not violate. You don't. If you are a Democrat, you don't vote for that bankruptcy bill. You just don't. You don't run for office as a Democrat and vote for that goddamn bankruptcy bill. You just don't. That makes me so angry I could just spit every time I think about it, and I guess you know that once I get started on it, and I apologize for that, but man, every time that comes up, how many more advantages do they want these bloodsuckers to have? Have you seen the new legislation that's come out over these credit card things? They've got we'll talk about it a little later in the program today. They've got wording in these things that the loan shark should have had it so good. Really. Really. Capone and Lucky Luciano and those people, they never had it so good as these banks have it nowadays. Never did they have it this good. Well, don't get me started on that. I guess I already did get started on it, but don't get me started on that. I see Bush was asked if he was going to go see Al Gore's tremendous new movie, and he coolly said no. Hell, come on. Bush, go see a good movie. Now, if it was a cartoon, that would be different. He probably would see it, but it's not a cartoon. It's something serious, something about the environment that he just totally would not understand, because he has shown us ever since he's been in office, and even before, and his father and most of his cronies in Washington have shown us they don't know a damn thing about the environment, nor do they care. All they care about is that they rape and pillage the land and the ground and the air and for everything they can get out of it right now and screw everybody in the future. To hell with them. Who cares? This is us we're worried about right now. We don't know those people in the future, damn thing. Let them wear their gas masks to survive. We don't care. That's the good old-fashioned family values Republican look at the environment. We don't care. Every opportunity they've had to reverse any environmental legislation, they do it. They fund they get the right wing fund think tanks funded. Exxon's got one funded right now, putting out all sorts of bullshit about the environment, about how global warming just doesn't exist, that man's had nothing to do with it. They go out and they find, and I get this email all the time from these right-wing think tanks wanting us to have guests on. I should do it, shouldn't I? And usually they find out who we are before they go ahead. If we do accept, them like that now and then. They find out who we are first, and then they cancel out on us. But you know as well as I know, and everybody who has a knowledge and a grasp of the situation of the environment knows that for every one scientist that they find to say there is no global warming, you can find 100 that can prove there is. And that's how it is. Those are the cold, hard facts. What else were we going to talk about today? I saw this article. They were talking about Dick Cheney a while back in a little more in-depth story about when he shot that friend of his in the face. I thought, the actual shooting was what was the big deal in the paper that day. And it turns out that what they were doing was some of this, what they call canned hunting. Not far from where I lived when I was brought up. I didn't really know the people that owned it, but they had one of those farms where they had canned hunting. And if you don't know what that is, they'll raise rabbits and pheasants, and in some cases bigger game, deer and elk and so forth, in cages, tame. Raise them in tame, I mean from birth. And then guys like Dick Cheney will come in and pay a fee, and on the day they come into the hunting preserve or farm or whatever they want to call it to do some hunting, they'll let the tame animals, which in many cases would eat out of your hand, they're so tame, they kick them out of their cages, shoo them away, and then these brave hunters like Dick Cheney and their friend, people like that come in and hunt and kill these tame, domesticated almost animals. I didn't know that's what Cheney was doing that day. It's disgusting. It's disgusting to even good hunters that actually go out and do regular hunting and stalk and hunt their. But these guys like the Cheneys that go out and hunt on these paid. I mean, it's despicable. It really is. But then again, what else would I expect from a man like Dick Cheney? Who could ever expect anything different? And I guess that brings me to one of the things I wanted to talk about today. You know, I guess you know by now, if you listen to this program and have listened to it at any time at all, you know I can be a fairly impetuous guy. And now and then I read something or hear something on radio or TV that makes me just want to turn the air blue with profanity. I'm hoping when I do that, everybody's out of earshot. But I'm afraid the Republican senator from Kansas, Pat Roberts, the distinguished senator from Kansas, I think he got my clock wound a little bit tighter than it ought to be just a couple of days ago. You all know who Roberts is, and he may well need to have some sort of a surgical procedure to separate his lips from Junior Bush's ass. He said something that I believe is an affront to every American who ever served in our military in war or in peacetime, to every person that's ever put on an American uniform. He said something that I think should enrage every one of the people that's ever worn our U.S. uniform. And the irony is, in this whole situation is that many of those military folks, the ones that are still living, probably took his comments as a compliment without really analyzing what he really said. And that's what I want to take a moment and go over you with. Those of you that saw his comments, maybe heard his comments and glossed over them, I know the news, you know, the press most certainly glossed over his comments and didn't say a whole lot about it. During the confirmation hearings for Hayden, Roberts said, "But you have no civil liberties if you are dead," unquote. And at first blush, it sounds like a reasonable statement, but wait a minute. "But you have no civil liberties if you are dead." What he really said there was, "Go ahead and take my liberties because they sure aren't worth dying for." That's what he was actually saying. Whether he meant to or not, that is what he actually said. "My liberties are not worth dying for. God damn it, I wish the millions of American soldiers who have left their lives and their blood on the battlefield would have known that our liberties were not worth dying for. It's too bad they didn't know that before they went out and spilled their blood and gave their lives for the civil liberties of everybody else in this country. It's just too damn bad that they didn't pass out a little leaflet telling them all that." Guys like Senator Pat Roberts from Kansas. You know, those soldiers and their families, they could have been spared a hell of a lot of pain and heartache. Oh. Senator Roberts, you worthless bastard. How can you say such a thing? "You have no civil liberties if you're dead." Let's face it. If you're dead, you've got nothing but your honor and your legacy left. But hundreds of thousands of Americans have died in battle to protect the civil liberties of millions of other Americans, and you make a statement like that? What a concept, Senator Roberts, dying to preserve civil liberties. I bet you never thought of that. You are an idiot, sir, and a coward as well. Why do I say he's a coward? I invited the good senator to come on this show and defend that statement, but his office said they'd get back to me. I haven't heard from him, and I wonder why. I wonder if someone on his staff or one of his fellow senators told him just how utterly moronic that statement actually is. And let's not forget, this is one of the same group of men and women who sent 2,500 or so of our soldiers to die in Iraq for, in their words, our liberties. Does the good senator from Kansas have any knowledge of the immortal words of the great patriot Patrick Henry? And let me quote Patrick Henry for the senator, because I doubt he's ever heard these words before or taken them to heart. And I quote, "Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is that gentleman wish? What would they have? Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." End quote. Of course, Roberts is not the only blithering idiot in the United States Senate. Senator John Cornyn, the distinguished Republican senator from the great state of Texas, said back in December, and I quote, "None of your civil liberties matter much after you're dead." And let's not forget another fine example of Republican leadership, Senator Jeffrey Sessions from Alabama, when referring to Bush's illegal spying on American citizens, stated, quote, "Over 3,000 Americans have no civil rights because they're no longer with us." The attitude of these men is a disgrace to the United States Senate, and moreover, it's a disgrace to the entire nation that they only pretend to serve. Our fathers and forefathers fought and died for our liberties, and these guys sit in their exalted positions and diminish their memories and the blood they spilled for their fellow citizens. They have no compunction about wasting precious lives of young American soldiers in the Bush War, because it has never occurred to them what preserving our liberty actually entails. Shame on these men. If you can call them that. They are cowards. They are worthless cowards, and they stand in the well of the Senate of the United States and make idiotic statements like this. And people from their states send them to that Senate. I do not understand, I will never understand, how some of these people get elected to the offices that they hold. Have you seen interviews with Senator Roberts? Pat Roberts from Kansas? The man is a moron. Oh, he's not the only moron in the Senate. He has plenty of company. There's some that are morons. There's some that just don't have a conscience. Some of them that are plenty intelligent. Almost all are rich. But some are unconscionable. And some of their votes are unconscionable. And the act of pulling the lever in the voting booth for some of these particular men is unconscionable. I do not understand. I never will. I'm going to pause for a break right now. I need a drink. I'll be right back.
Impressive crowd, the haves and the have mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
Oh, it's true. It's true. It's true. It's true. call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Hey, back with you. Had a chance to cool down a little bit. I tell you, I can't talk about idiots without getting a little bit worked up. I don't know what's getting to me. I'm not taking any extra blood pressure medication, and actually, at the doctor recently, my blood pressure is quite good, so I must be doing something right. But does it bother you when you hear people say crap like that in the Senate and the House and on some of the TV shows? They are getting up in front of the American public and giving us their words of wisdom. And, you know, do their aides ever pull them aside and say, sir, you know, what you just said were the words of an idiot, sir? I mean, doesn't anybody ever do that to these guys? And you know, one of the toughest jobs in Washington, and the last time I was there, I got a chance to see it up close and personal. I can't think of the particular Senate room, but it's right there on that big column that goes up and down, you know, about three or four stories up through the Russell Senate office building there. I can't think of the name of the room. The room where they had the hearings on the Titanic when it went down. Anyway, that's where they do all the interviews around there. They've got these big columns, and each network's got a place in between a couple of these columns where they leave their camera and their microphones and everything set up. So at a moment's notice, they can run a cameraman, a crew member, and reporters, the ones you see on CNN and Fox and all that all the time. You recognize all of them. And it's got to be extremely difficult to be one of those reporters that reports for Wolf Blitzer or for Matthews or it's really got to be tough, because here you are interviewing these guys like this Roberts, and he says something like that, and you know, you've got to want to feel like smacking him up the side of the head with the microphone and say, what did you say? And yet you've got to stand there composed and, you know, keep your job and say, yes, sir, thank you, sir, for your interview. It's got to be tough. I mean, it's got to be. I mean, I guess these people got families and they have to listen to that crap and go along with it. I couldn't do it. I'd get fired. I'd get fired in no time. I had somebody said something to me over the weekend. I shouldn't tell personal stories, but I had something happen to me over the weekend that probably came closer than I want to think about to getting me put in jail. In my little office, somebody walked by, and I have some pictures hanging there of Harry Truman, of Franklin Roosevelt, of Jefferson, of Jackson. Who did I leave out? Kennedy. Well, anyway, mostly all Democrats. Woodrow Wilson. All Democratic presidents. Good pictures of them. And this guy walks by, looks in the office. I don't know him from Adam. Looks in the office and looks up and says, well, I guess most of them aren't so bad except for that son of a bitch Kennedy. Well, I guess this guy doesn't know that John Kennedy is a hero of mine. And I said, what? And that led to one thing led to another. And, well, anyway, I had the good sense to stop, but just barely. The gentleman knows enough not to come back and say anything to me ever again, but I can't believe people do that, and it's hard nowadays. It's really hard when people will just out of the clear blue come up and say something to you like that. I'm not the kind of person that takes that very easily. I would no more think of walking up to somebody's private office and saying something about a photograph they had on the wall than the man in the moon. I mean, I've got a bunch of Ohio State Buckeye stuff on my walls. As you know, I'm a proud Ohio State Buckeye. And I don't care who knows it. And, you know, very often people from, you know, don't make me say it, that state just north of of Ohio. Very often people from there will walk by. You know, they wear those green and yellow or blue and yellow colors. They will walk by and they'll see my Buckeye stuff, and they'll make some smart-ass remark about my Buckeye stuff. And, you know, we expect that from each other. That's our rivalry. That's what we do. We have fun with it. But, you know, on the political level, when a guy looks at you and says that you're a political hero, starts calling him names, that's no fun to that. So I don't know why I got sidetracked with that. You can call, you know. You can get off your butts and give us a call, 866-546-5254. I really wish you would. There are many things we could talk about today. Many, many things that we could talk about today. One thing I did want to mention, I got some video sent to me. You know, here, what was it, a week or 2 weeks ago when we had all these protests going on around the country about the borders? Somebody sent me a video, a link to a video, and said, and it was just simple, sent the link and said, "Do you see anything odd about this?" And it was one of the counter-protests, and it was held in Atlanta, and it wasn't a big counter-protest or anything. I don't know, there's several hundred people in it. And I watched it, and, you know, all these people were counter-protesting, and, you know, there's not a day goes by what I don't absolutely gaze in wonderment at something I see in the TV screen or listen to in the radio and go, huh. But, you know, this latest right-wing frothing at the mouth Mexican flag flap is really something to behold. You know, they went nuts. And you know they did. You know I'm not kidding. They went nuts over those marchers in the recent demonstrations carrying Mexican flag. You remember all that? All the hoopla about, oh, they had Mexican flags. They had the nerve to carry Mexican flags. You would have thought that Alger Hiss and Mata Hari and Benedict Arnold were marching in those parades. Oh, my God. Someone actually had a flag other than the stars and the stripes on display. Get the gallows ready. Get the firing squad. Dust off old Sparky. Let's send these people straight to hell for daring to fly anything but the American flag at a rally. I guess most of these folks have never been to Miami and seen the various celebrations they have down there. They fly about 50 different flags in Miami that I guess these folks aren't culturally aware enough. They have no cultural awareness to see that sometimes that happens in this country, the land of the free, I might add. And so I listened to all this, and I saw a few video clips, and I saw a sprinkling of some foreign flags, and even saw the Union Jack being held by some guy. But the most amazing sight I saw during those protests and marches was this one held in Atlanta by the counter-protesters. They had all of the obligatory anti-Hispanic signs, complete with every redneck slogan ever devised against our friends from south of the border. You know the ones. The beaners and this, and any insult they could throw at them. But then it hit me. And things often hit me from a different direction than they do other folks, and I'll admit that. But it hit me that this counter-protest being held against the Mexicans, flying the Mexican flag, was infested with dozens of people proudly displaying the good old stars and bars, the Confederate flag. Now, here's where everybody that lives in the South is going to start to hate me, whether you're Republican or Democrat, I suppose, but I'm going to say it anyway because I'm thinking it, and as you know, if I'm thinking it, I'm going to say it. All these guys are pissed off about these Mexicans with these Mexican flags, and they are carrying the Confederate flag. Here we had people who didn't want to be part of the United States and even went so far as to drop out of the United States and then attacked the United States Armed Forces in South Carolina, which led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of American soldiers and even more from the Confederacy. People whose ancestors didn't want to be part of the United States. Now, maybe I'm missing something here, but I I don't think so. We have people whose ancestors, who approximately 145 years ago, were willing to kill citizens of the United States so they could secede from the Union of States, but now are willing to kill people who do want to be part of the United States. Call me crazy, but something here just doesn't make sense. And this isn't an issue that's necessarily 145 years old either. As you will recall, only recently, many Southerners have been willing to cause quite a fight over being able to fight to, fly the Confederate flag over the Capitol buildings in their respective states. South Carolina, for one, the Confederate flag, the flag of people who wanted out of the United States. And they want that flag flown alongside of the Stars and Stripes. That makes no sense to me. It never has. I know this will make some Southern people angry at me, but I have always maintained that it would have been perfectly appropriate to have had General Lee and Jefferson Davis hung for treason after that war. But then, thankfully, reasonable people in Washington wanted to forgive and forget. Some of those people in the counter-protest in Atlanta have done neither. Odd, but I don't recall the media making an issue of that at all. Did you notice that? I did. Didn't care much for it. 866-546-5254. Evidently didn't bother you either. 866-546-5254. Going to pause for a break. Pause for a break. Be back in just a moment.
He's too cocky. He's too uptight. Like a deer caught in a headlight. When he winks, he has that beady lie. Although some Democrats are hollow, we find Bush harder to swallow. That little pecker leans too much to the right.
Hit it, boys. I love parades and show tunes, and I love Willie Grace. I love presidents with balls. Just keep Bush out of my face. He found the White House through the back door. The Chads were hard to push. We should send him packing. And on. I don't like Bush. He won't let us into foxholes. We're just not military. He's just a homophobe. He won't let me and Larry. He couldn't wait to go to war to kick Iraqi tush. He had a hard on to kill anyone. And on. I don't like Bush. Blow it, boys. Ooh, that's nice. He went looking for Osama to show that he was brave. He had his young men in the army shoot his missiles into caves. He's a human bobblehead doll, a stuttering little puss with a third grade vocabulary. And on. I don't like Bush.
We've got a lot of problems, but I'm going to tell you something about this country. In my mind, there is no doubt that we won't solve these problems.
There's a good thing about Georgie. He's not totally a bummer. Now we can all appreciate the guy who got a hummer. So say goodbye to W. Let's all give him the push. Let's give Hillary a shot. Because I don't like Bush. He won't take any crap from anyone. Hey, bring back the BJ guy. Come on. I don't like Bush. I can use a good stogie right now. I can handle Dick and Colin, but I don't like Bush. No way. I can't take him anymore. That guy leaves a bad taste in my mouth. I've had enough. I'm out of here. Toodles.
Oh, yeah, toodles. I don't like Bush. Hey, thanks for being with us this afternoon. It's about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. here on the Guy James Show, 866-546-5254. I think we've got somebody on the phone. I think we got... Hey, Greg, is that you?
Yes, hi, Guy.
Welcome.
I wanted to tell you about our dear friend Senator Lieberman and all the fun he had on Friday.
Sounds like he had a regular party.
Oh, unfortunately, I'm still in California until the end of the week, so I missed on the fun frivolity. But it was quite interesting. For those who don't know what happened, the Connecticut Democrats had their convention to nominate their party candidate. So, you know, everybody expected Joe to win, and, you know, that was not a question. But his primary challenger, Ned Lamont, he needed 15% of the votes for delegates to go. And everyone said, well, you know, we don't know if he's going to make it or not. You know, people weren't too hopeful. Well, turns out that he came in and he got 33% of the delegates' votes at the convention.
I'm told that if that had been a secret ballot, he probably would have ended up with quite a few more than that.
Oh, well, what happened was is that Joe's people went and strong-armed the Democratic town committees, you know, and said, you better vote for Joe, you know. And so, you know, I think it would have gone to 40 or 50% had people been able to vote their conscience.
Yeah, exactly.
So the moral of the story is I think the whole country's going to be looking to Connecticut because, you know, people thought dear Joe was untouchable. And, you know, now he's running pretty scared.
And I understand the argument. I do. There are people saying, well, okay, but we've still got to elect Joe Lieberman. No, you know, so the Democrats can get a majority. No, we don't. We don't have to have guys like him in the Senate. I'd rather be able to claim that we had pure blood in the Senate than have a guy like him in there. I'm sorry, but.
Yeah, it depends on the situation. You know, if you look at Ben Nelson, you know, or whatever, in a very red state or something, I can understand when they have to make some choices. You know, if you're in Indiana or something like that, and Bush is so popular, but you know, Connecticut is one of the is the state where Bush has among the highest levels of disapproval. So there's no reason for Lieberman to do this, at all. And you know, and it's one thing to have conservative views, but for him to go on Fox News and all these other shows and trash Democrats, or be friends with Sean Hannity, who says Democrats are terrorists, well, that just goes too far.
You're exactly right, and I'm looking at his voting record right now. You know, he's got a 53% liberal voting record, which is extremely poor. It is, however, better than one of our senators here in Florida, Senator Nelson. But nonetheless, it's extremely poor. And I think the key point, Greg, is what you said about where he happens to be. Yes, Nelson's in a 50-50 state here, but Lieberman is not.
Exactly. And I think that's the point. But, you know, what's interesting is what's happening here is the media is trying to twist this a certain way. And their spin is, oh, it's all about the war. You know, everyone they interview, they say, well, everything would just be fine and dandy had it not been for Lieberman's views on the war. And that's not true at all. I mean, you could go through a list of about 30 things that about Lieberman, him supporting the Terry Schiavo thing, to supporting the bankruptcy bill, to, you know, voting for closure on Alito, you know, to censuring President Clinton but not being interested in censuring Bush. I mean, you could go on and on.
And I think you're quite right about him getting some sort of pleasure out of being Mr. Bush's favorite Democrat. That talk a while back that was taking place, and that was no idle gossip about Cheney resigning and perhaps him naming Lieberman as vice president. Lieberman loves those kind of stories. He likes being able to ride the fence the way he has and be suck up to Mr. Bush, and I hate that.
Well, and the thing that's even more despicable is that, you know, the first thing that came out of his mouth when the primary challenge was announced, he said, well, I'm just going to run as an independent. So in other words, screw Connecticut, screw what's important for the party. It's all about Joe and Joe's ego. And then what happens is that could be damaging to people down ticket. You know, we have a lot of people in my district. We have the wonderful Diane Farrell, who's trying to take out slimy weasel Chris Shays. And, you know, that could hurt them too. So it just shows what a detriment Joe is to the party.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And one of those guys that, it'd be so great if we could get him out of there. It'd be so great. And I think there's a good shot. I still do. 33% showing it that was terrific.
Yep, and like I say, it should just be a warning to other people because everybody thought Job was at most the safest seat in the country, and that's not a given fact anymore. So
no.
I think other senators should watch too, and especially right across the border, our dear friends Hillary and Schumer. I think they should take note as well.
Absolutely.
So anyway, just my 2 cents for today, guys.
And a good 2 cents it was. Thank you.
Thank you.
And who we have on this line?
It's Wayne, guy.
Hi, Wayne.
From West Virginia.
Good to hear from you.
I'm excited about the Ned Lamont thing, and I'm proud to say I sent him $50.
Attaboy.
Not that he needed my $50, but I just wanted to show him that he had support in other places besides Connecticut. You know, and it's a very important thing. And, you know, there, people like Lieberman have to be gone. Now, there are some people that we could give a little leeway, hopefully, to get a Democratic majority. But if we do, then that means we get to hold these Democrats 100% accountable.
That's right.
Because once they have the majority, they no longer have any excuses.
Exactly, and right. Good point.
And if they don't behave themselves and perform like Democrats should, then we could get rid of them in 2008. They have to be able to have that test of having, you know, no excuses.
You're so right, Wayne. You really are. I mean, we all know what a good Democrat stands for. Joe Lieberman knows what a good Democrat stands for. And if he's willing to step across the line time after time after time, it's not acceptable.
Right. And Joe Lieberman also knows he's not a good Democrat.
That's exactly right.
He has to know that.
Yep.
You know, so do the honorable thing and switch parties.
Sure.
If you want. But don't continue to try to fool me and call yourself a Democrat.
Sure,
that's unacceptable.
I would have thought a whole lot more of him if he'd have done that.
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, in West Virginia, we're kind of trying to start things like that, and you know, of holding Democrats responsible. And you know, in many ways, I'm telling people, listen, you're the decider. And you tell these Democrats that you will decide if they're a Democrat or not, not just because they call themselves one.
Exactly right.
You know, we have a Democrat majority here, so there's an awful lot of Republicans that run as Democrats because they feel that's the only way they can be elected.
Yeah.
But you could watch how their votes go, and you know what they are.
Well, you're going to bring that state home for us this time, aren't you?
We're going to try like hell. That's all I could promise to you, buddy.
Well,
we're changing things. Things are changing.
They are, and I regularly talk to my friends in Ohio. I'm a former Buckeye, and next door to you folks, and things are changing there very rapidly as well, I can tell you.
Well, yeah, I've been talking to some people in Ohio, and, you know, we work very closely. Some of our we represent some people in Ohio, too, through the unions, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we're trying to get them motivated to, they got to change things. They got to change things as well.
Well, I think
we got a lot of work to do, but I think a lot of people are getting emboldened, and what happened to Joe Lieberman hopefully has emboldened a lot more people.
Oh, you bet. And from all I've read from that up there, it is a fact. What Greg just said, that they did some strong arm, and Lieberman people had to because the vote was out in the open. But had it been a secret ballot, I think Lieberman would have got a real education.
Right. Well, the real ballot's coming up here in a few months.
Yep.
And I think Mr. Joe is in for a hell of a shock.
I hope so.
I do too, buddy. I do too. So, anyway, I just wanted to put in my 2 cents.
Well, another fine 2 cents it was. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Good to hear from you.
Bye.
Yeah, Joe might have a shock coming. 33, you know, people might look at that caucus or whatever you want to call it up there the other day and say, well, you know, he only got 33% of the vote. That's very true. That's very true. But it was a secret vote, a secret ballot. And when people are able to go out in front of everybody else and twist arms, and Lieberman's people, you know, threaten these party leaders and these local chairmen and all that with taking away their goodies from them if they don't play along with Joe Lieberman. That's one thing. But behind closed doors when the vote is a secret and nobody knows who's going to be held accountable. I think it's going to tell a whole nother story. And you better believe, and it's quite evident, as from the stuff that's starting to come out of the Lieberman campaign, that he knows in that he's in for the fight of his life. And even if he loses, even if he wins, nothing could be better for him to have a close election. So we're going to watch that one very, very closely. Have you seen the red-blue map lately? Our good friend Pamela from the wonderful state of Montana sent me the new red-blue map the other day. And, you know, there's only three states left. Utah, Idaho, and, what is the other one? Wyoming? I think it's Utah, Wyoming, definitely Utah and Idaho. And I think Wyoming as well, that are in favor of Bush right now. Three states with a total of 11 electoral votes if the election were held today and Bush were running. Of course, he is not. And that is the point I wanted to bring up. Bush is not running. Whoever the Republicans run will be a far, far, far stronger candidate than Bush is or was. Let's face it. He was an extremely weak candidate who had a good machine behind him and a lot of money behind him and a lot of great propaganda behind him and a lot of bullshit behind him from the Swift Boat guys and all that. Got away with all this business about the Texas National Guard. He got away with murder in that election, in both of them. Stole one, maybe stole them both. And make no mistake about this, and I no longer feel like I'm wearing a tinfoil hat or have to put one on when I say this. Make no mistake about it, and we're going to talk about this tomorrow with Greg Palast. They are planning to steal another one, okay? They were very emboldened by these last two. Very emboldened by these last two. They found out they can do it, they have done it, and they will try it again. And I think there's little doubt. Well, little doubt. There's no doubt that they'll try it again. They're two for two, and they're going to go for it again. So we have to be on our toes. We have to work a little extra hard this year, even though we think we're in the driver's seat right now. And we may be. We may be in the polls. But this is going to be one of those times winning an election 52-48, 51-49, 53-47, or something like that in that neighborhood. That's not going to do. That's not going to do. We're going to have to win our elections convincingly. Because if they're not won convincingly, you know what might happen. You know the Diebolds just might take over. They have before, and they can again. And we must be aware of that. They are planning on doing it again. They are poised to do it again. They have the machinery in place to do it again. They will do it again. And so it is our duty to win these elections by so much that they cannot do it again. That it is so apparent that it has been fixed, that no one will accept their lies ever again. Myself, as I've said many, many times, the voting machines should all end up in the local landfill. All of them. I don't care who manufactures them. I don't care. All electronic voting machines should end up in the landfill. Let's go back to paper ballots. Let's go back to a bipartisan group checking the votes and rechecking the votes and turning them into a bipartisan group. Let the press wait a couple of days if they have to. Who cares? They do that in Germany, I believe. They wait a few days to get their final election. We can do that too. We don't have so many votes that they can't be counted by hand in these precincts all over the country and then tabulated. No, sir, we don't. And I would a whole lot rather trust that than I would these electronic voting machines that are so hackable. And that's been proven again and again and again right now that you can do so much with these machines to make them say what you want them to say. Plus the other devious methods they use to keep people away from the polls, to take people off of the voter rolls. They've got many tricks up their sleeves. It's not just Mr. Diebold that they have planned to win the election. No, no. They've got many ways to do it. So we've got to keep that in mind. Voter intimidation, they're masters at that. And, of course, we all know what they did here on Florida, taking people off the voter rolls, and they've done that in Ohio as well. So look out. They're going to be doing that everywhere. Hey, it's about time for news at the top of the hour. What's it going to be? What's the stock market doing? What's the price of gold? And all that kind of stuff. We'll be back. Don't you go anywhere. Got news coming up in, oh, I don't know, about 10 seconds. You're listening to The Guy James Show.
This is Quality News Network. A mystery in Washington where the Department of Veterans Affairs says that personal data on about 26.5 million U.S. military veterans was stolen from the residence of a department data analyst who improperly took the material home. The data includes names, social security numbers, and dates of birth for the veterans, but the government says there's no indication the data has been used for identity theft. The Supreme Court has reaffirmed the right of police to enter a private home in an emergency without knocking or first making their presence known. Justices say four police officers in Brigham City, Utah, were justified in entering a home back in 2000 when they peered through a window and saw a teenager in a fight with adults. The U.S. government says the Atlantic hurricane season, which begins on June 1st, will be very active with up to 10 hurricanes, although not as busy as last year's record-breaking season. The new Iraqi prime minister says his forces could be in charge in most of Iraq by December of this year. And officials with British Prime Minister Tony Blair, who's in Iraq today, are saying all foreign troops may be gone within 4 years. Violence continues in Iraq, where two bombs killed 3 and wounded 12 today in a Baghdad market. And the trial of Saddam Hussein resumed today, but quickly erupted into a shouting match between the judge and the former Iraqi leader after guards forcibly ejected a defense attorney. Senior officials from the United States, Russia, China, France, Britain, and Germany will all reportedly meet in London on Wednesday to discuss the next steps regarding Iran's disputed nuclear program. In Gaza City, a Jordanian citizen has reportedly been killed in crossfire between gunmen and security forces from the two rival Palestinian parties, Fatah and Hamas. Coalition warplanes bombed a village in southern Afghanistan overnight, killing an estimated 80 people, including 60 Taliban. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin, who narrowly won re-election on Saturday, is pledging to spend the first 100 days of his second term finding ways to speed up rebuilding, cleaning up debris, and solving New Orleans' housing crisis. A court document released yesterday reveals that Louisiana Congressman William Jefferson, who's under investigation for bribery, was videotaped and recorded accepting $100,000 in $100 bills from an FBI informant last July. FBI agents later found most of that money hidden in his freezer. Jefferson has not been charged and denies any wrongdoing. Montenegro has voted to secede from Serbia and become an independent nation. And Kentucky Derby winner Barbaro is making progress after undergoing more than 5 hours of surgery on his broken right ankle. But the doctor who performed the surgery says the colt has only a 50-50 chance of survival. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The New York Stock Exchange, trying to beat rival NASDAQ in the race to become the first transatlantic stock market, offered $10.2 billion in cash and shares today for European exchange operator Euronext. An investor group led by several Philadelphia area executives is expected to seal a deal this week to buy the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News newspapers from McClatchy for $600 million. McClatchy recently acquired both papers from Knight Ridder, which had owned them since 1969. Federal authorities say they have uncovered 15 instances of gas price gouging after Hurricane Katrina, but so far the FTC says it has found no widespread effort by the oil industry to unlawfully control the commodity. The average retail price of a gallon of gas fell about $1.45 across the nation during the past 2 weeks. That's the first drop since prices began a steady climb in late February. Toyota has announced it plans to build new factories in China, India, France, and the U.S. to boost its global network to 41 factories. The Da Vinci Code made nearly $225 million at the box office worldwide over the weekend, $77 million of it in the U.S. In Houston, jurors have resumed their deliberations in the conspiracy trial of former Enron chiefs Jeffrey Skilling and Ken Lay. Meanwhile, Lay is on trial again without a jury on charges stemming from his personal banking. His trial began last Thursday and could wrap up as early as tomorrow. Lightsweet crude oil is trading at $68.55 a barrel. Dow Industrial is down 59. NASDAQ is down 30. And the S&P 500 is off 9 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, sirree, Bob. It is about 6 minutes after the hour. Guy James back with you here for the second hour and final hour of the program today. So glad to have all of you along with us. Nice size audience today. Where are you on the telephones, though? 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. How many of you know who this, oh, by the way, during the news, I heard a big mistake during the news. Did you hear that? I heard the girl say that the price of gas has dropped $1.45 a gallon in the last 2 weeks. Man, I almost didn't show up for the second half of the program. I was going to run down, fill up my tank, but I think she meant 45 cents, not $1.45. And I'm not so sure about the 45 cents, maybe 5 cents. What's the price of gas where you're at? I was talking to someone in Ohio today that was telling me that it was like $2.46, I think it said a gallon there at one of the wholesale clubs. And I paid $2.91 a gallon today here, $2.91. I'm sure our California folks are spending that much and more. Oh, boy, it's no fun filling up the old gas. Well, it hasn't been for several years now, but whew, getting to be a fearsome experience going to the gas station now. And, you know, they don't even run out and check your oil and wash your windows for you. How many of you are old enough to remember a gas wars where all the gas stations in your local community would get into a fight? And so they'd start lowering gas prices. Some of you youngsters may never have seen this. They would start lowering gas prices to see who could, you know, get the lowest and get all the business and run the other guys out of business. This is back when they filled the tank for you. They checked your oil. They checked the air in your tires. They washed your windows. Yes, there was a time when they actually did that. ever so often they would dress somebody up like a clown and stand them next to the street in front of the gas station. I mean, the place would look like a circus, so that you would pull in there, you know, you'd have the kids in the back, kind of like the McDonald's deal is now. You'd have a car full of kids in the back, and everybody, oh, Dad, let's stop at the gas station, there's a clown. And, they'd have suckers for the kids, and they would give away, like, free glasses. Every house in America had a cupboard full of free glasses that they got at the gas station. Courtesy of... let me see if I can think of some of the old gas. Remember Pure Gas that had the horse with the wing? I don't know. Marathon. I'm trying to think of some of the old-time gas companies that aren't around anymore. But anyway, those are a couple that I do remember. How did I get started on that? I don't know. But anyway, it's painful to go get gas nowadays. It really is. I wanted to tell you about, you know, we talked about ethics in Washington recently. And before I get to the phone, I'm just going to talk about this just for a moment or so. Our folks from the Center for American Progress sent this to me about ethics. Representative John Doolittle, another congressman from California, has come under increased scrutiny for his ties to his former friend and colleague, fallen lobbyist Jack Abramoff. Oh, there's that name again. Doolittle had free use of the lobbyist skyboxes at sporting events and took lavish privately funded trips. While Doolittle has tried to make his name in Congress as one of the reform-minded Gang of Seven, Roll Call today notes that since he entered office in 1991, he has worked to boost lawmakers' compensation and perks. Doolittle has called for, quote, a core of staff to assist the members to perform routine tasks such as rides to airport, pickups, deliveries, etc., for an additional automobile for each member to use in the Capitol, and for the government to pay for the moving expenses of lawmakers when they relocate to Washington, D.C. Doolittle's spokesman tried to justify the congressman's actions by saying that Doolittle believes, quote, the staff and all federal employees should have the same benefits that all Americans are insured with, unquote, pointing out that federal employees lack vision or dental benefits, but fully 41% of America's middle class didn't even have basic health insurance in 2005 and certainly didn't have access to private core of staff to assist them in routine tasks. Doolittle's spokesman also failed to note that his federal health insurance program is considered one of the best in the nation, and federal employees currently do have access to some plans that offer vision and dental benefits. Somewhere over the rainbow, I'll tell you, some of these guys, how's a guy like that get in Congress? Been there since 91. His constituency's got to know he's there working for the benefit of himself and his fellow members of Congress. Have you been in the halls of Congress? Have you seen their gymnasium? Have you seen their cafeteria? Have you seen that little railroad to get to ride underneath the Capitol building? Have you seen the way they live there? And he's there trying to improve their health insurance and their vision and their benefits and another car, and they want more staff to do. Oh, my God. Hey, let's go to the phones. Hi, who's with us?
This is Ben Birch.
Hi, Ben. How you doing?
Just fine, and I'd be willing to bet you that's 14.5 cents, not $1.45.
I think it's got to be somewhere around there. I think you're right.
Because we're still 285.9 here is the lowest price.
285.9. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I heard that. I heard a whoa, $1.45. You're right, 14.5. I bet you got it exactly right.
The local news radio station here, WBBM AM. You know, I mean, along with the news and all of the weather and the traffic, every 8 minutes they have the low gas price and where to find it.
Oh man, I bet certain stations get the. Hey, Ben, you're not old enough, do you? You don't remember the old-time gas wars.
Oh, I sure do.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's swap stories.
Well, there was...
Let's do a how low can you go story.
Well, I remember one from around here that was in the late 60s, where there was a Sinclair station and a Marathon station that were right across from each other. And one got down to like 9 cents a gallon.
Oh, you got me. You got me. I was going down to 14. That was as low as I could go. I have to fold.
Yeah, the other guy stopped at about 15. The other one, you know, kept pushing a little lower and a little lower and a little lower to see if he could make the other guy follow suit. And I think we just found who had the, you know, whose pocketbook broke first.
You know, when it got down to 14 cents, my Uncle Milton, who's a farmer, got his tractor out with a loader on. We loaded the big tank onto the flatbed truck that we used to fill all the tractors with. We loaded it on the flatbed and went into town and filled that, 300-and-some-gallon tank with 14-cent-a-gallon gasoline.
Yep.
And it had to stay there, of course, on the truck until until we emptied it out some. Oh, man. I tell you, it's a painful thing to pull in there now. I mean, it's $50 and $50 and just I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go.
I remember when the city service station, which, you know, became Citgo.
Oh, yeah, city service, yeah.
Yeah, well, it became Citgo. It's, you know, the sort of same company that's changed the name. Across from us, you know, we had an old rural roadhouse out in the middle of what was rural Cook County, Illinois back then. Nothing rural around here anymore. Across from us was the city service station, and they regularly had contests and games and little pull-off pieces scratch-offs and collect all 50 state things and you win this. And, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, and Lionel trains they were selling through there, you know, at, like, you know, completely bargain prices.
I was an American Flyer man myself.
Oh, I had both, and I had Mark.
Okay. Well, did they have clowns?
At the station, no clowns.
Oh, well, see, we really had it all over. Hey, you mentioned city service, mm-hmm. and you mentioned Marathon. What was the other one you mentioned?
Sinclair,
yeah,
with the dinosaur.
Yeah, and I wonder, is Texaco still around anywhere?
I've seen some Texaco stations when I've been in Iowa in the last couple of years.
Okay, yeah, that was the old...
Some Kerr-McGee stations, too.
Some which one?
KM, Kerr-McGee.
Kerr-McGee, okay. Yeah, you don't have Hess up there where you are, do you?
No.
We have Hess, a lot of them here in Florida. Trying to think of some of the other ones around. I'm trying to think who sponsored. Wasn't it Texaco that sponsored the old Milton Berle show?
It sure was.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, you're a little longer in the tooth than I thought you were. Or else you
maybe
got some...
I just have a better memory from things that happened when I was really small.
Really small. Okay.
You take care.
Thank you, Ben. It was a fun trip down memory lane. Oh, yeah. Gosh, that does bring back memories, doesn't it? Some of those old... Do you have experiences like that when you were a kid, the old gas station gas wars and all that? I see down in Venezuela right now they're paying... I don't know, 10, 15 cents a gallon for gas. I think that's what it is. I was going to drive down there, but I got to figuring it out, and it didn't work out quite right. I promised everybody, now, don't run, girls, don't run screaming from your computers here for a moment, okay? You got to bear with me on this. You got to know that once in a while that I sit down and write something with my tongue a little bit in my cheek. Not completely, but a little bit. And those of you that are on Democratic Underground, I told you what I was going to talk about this hour. And I'm just looking to see if anybody responded to what I said I was going to talk about this hour here. It's running a little... No one did. So this may come as a surprise to everybody what I said it was... I said I was going to talk about nipples this hour. There they go, screaming, running from the... all right, no, wait a minute. This is Democrats we're talking about here. These are liberal people. These are reasonable people I'm talking to right now. So when I mention nipple, probably they didn't start cursing me and you know. All right, are you nuts? Why did you bring this up? Did you see the new bill the Senate came up with regarding decency on TV? You can sure tell it's an election year. They passed a new bill the other day raising the maximum fine for indecent TV content from $32,500 up to $325,000. Wow. That's the FCC. Now, I should caution all of you that the FCC has no control over what we say here on the Internet. They'll probably try that some of these days. But the FCC can now find a radio station. Oh, boy, that lit up the telephone banks here. And I'll get to you in just a moment. The FCC can find a radio station or TV station up to $325,000 now for anything that they deem to be indecent. And it seems their discretion is, well, somewhat arbitrary. It's whatever they think, and by they, I mean the FCC, you know, Big Brother. It's whatever they think is indecent. I think indecent isn't in the eye of the beholder. And I think indecent is seeing Junior Bush give a speech of any kind. Well, his speeches are always in very poor taste. They're given with mangled English, and even the most elementary student would find them, most of them, laughable. His logic is offensive, and his demeanor offends me more than anything that I've ever seen on TV. There's no question about that. All of this mess with this vote at the Senate over Janet Jackson. Now, who would ever thought that a lone nipple, something many of us have needed for sustenance, for life itself, something that every human being on the planet has a pair of, who would have thought a nipple, a small, perhaps 3/4 inch long protuberance of human skin, would cause a debate on the floor of first the United States House of Representatives and then the sacrosanct floor of the United States Senate. We've got two wars going on, contemplating another. We're buying arms from Russia, which I'm going to talk about in a little while. We've got illegal spying from the U.S. government on innocent private citizens, global warming, gas prices gone through the ceiling, hundreds of thousands of lives being lost in Darfur, United States congressmen enjoying the favors of ladies of the evening, legislators accepting to what amounts to bribery every single day by lobbyists, unexplained visits to the White House by homosexual prostitutes, male homosexual prostitutes, all of this and a whole lot more going on, and the United States Senate is talking about how obscene Janet Jackson's nipple is. Now, personally, I believe that there are small nipples, big nipples, dark nipples, light nipples, long nipples, short nipples, pink nipples, ugly nipples, and beautiful nipples, but I have never seen an obscene nipple. You can sure tell it's an election year, can't you? These guys don't want to go near anything serious for fear of losing a vote or two. We have them, you know, we got the United States Senate voted on obscenity issues when nearly all of them are political whores. I tell you, Washington sure someplace, isn't it? Isn't it interesting? Let's go to the phones. Hi, who's with us? Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Guy. This is Sue in California.
Hi, Sue.
How you doing?
I'm great.
Well, I don't really know what all to say about all this obscenity and stuff, but you're right. There's a lot of obscene things going on, but they aren't necessarily nipples, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that one all the way. It seems like they should be, you know, concentrating their efforts on some things that are a little bit more important. I'm really, really disturbed about this thing about the veterans' identities being stolen on the database. I was kind of wondering, seems like to me that the people that were on the database are the ones that were enrolled in the healthcare system that the VA offers. And I find that very disturbing. I actually used to work for the Veterans Administration Medical Center a number of years ago, and it tended to be the people that were on that particular healthcare system were people that had no other way to go as far as health insurance went.
Yeah, and you know, this broke so late today, at least for me, that I couldn't gather enough information on it to talk intelligently about it. I'm sure there's more come out even since the program has started, but we're talking about millions of people.
Yeah, it was 26.5 million
Holy
veterans.
Cow.
And that's a lot of people, a lot of men and women both, you know, and it's very, very disturbing to me because it's like, it seems like there's nothing out there anymore that's confidential, you know. There's no confidentiality at all on anything, and everybody's identities being stolen and all this. I would really like to know what is at the bottom. To me, this is obscene.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Where's it going to end? And let me ask you, have you discussed this with any of your friends and neighbors and family?
Well,
not necessarily the VA issue, but the privacy issues.
I have. It's interesting. It seems like most people are very upset about it on some level, but a lot of people don't even seem to know about it, which I find even more disturbing. Or if not that, they just go, oh, well, that's nothing new. I already thought that was going on anyway, you know, like the phone spying thing and all that, you know.
I went to the Verizon phone office this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Verizon phone. And I called them last week, and they denied any knowledge of this. And so I went to the office this morning. I'm due for a new phone and a new contract and all. And the manager of the store was standing there. And so I asked him point blank about this, and I wasn't going to make a fuss about it or anything, but I asked him point blank about this, and he looked me square in the eye, and he says, I have no idea what you are talking about. And I said, wait a minute. I can understand maybe if you don't want to admit or you don't have any information or something, but you're not going to tell me that I'm the first guy to come in here in, what, a week and a half since this story broke? The mm-hmm. first person that's mentioned this to you, and you don't have a clue what I'm talking about. He said, I have no clue whatsoever what you're talking about. I didn't know what to say to him.
Well, I think they know, of course, but they just don't want to admit it, because if they admit it, it's kind of like if you admit that you know something, then you're guilty.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
He was good.
I don't know. I dumped AT&T myself the day after I found out about it. Fortunately, I did not have them for very long as a long-distance carrier, and I had immediately dumped them. And when I called, they wanted to know why. And I said, well, haven't you turned on the news lately? I mean, it's all over the television. Oh, well, there's some guy, one of the managers, is running all over around here in a state of panic. And I said, well, he should be in a state of panic. I said, because you guys are going to lose a lot of your business, whether you like it or not. I said, you know, I said, the American people will only take so much of this stuff.
Yeah.
That's really where it's at. It doesn't matter what your political party is. It's an issue of, to me, it's just something that affects everybody. It doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican or whatever.
No, you're exactly right. And I tell you, I'm horrified. I've asked several people that I know that are very apolitical, you know, and I've asked them about it, and they said, I don't care. Well, why would I care, you know? And once you explain a few things to them, then they start to care.
Yeah. Well, when they find out that their Social Security number is being given out, and, you know, it's on some database somewhere, and credit cards, same deal, you know, all these thefts with the... you know, these various credit card companies that you hear about. I don't know. Personally, I've closed a lot of my credit cards down, just called them up and just closed the account, and they want to know why, and I just tell them, too much identity theft going on for me. See you later. You know, that's what I've been doing with them. And I wonder if this is beginning to hurt them economically, these companies.
I wonder. The public is so doggone apathetic. You know, one of the arguments that I like to bring up I've got this friend, I'll call him Jerry, and Jerry's originally from New York City. And Jerry said, I don't care. I don't care if they monitor my phone. I don't care at all. I said, okay, Jerry, let me ask you a question. And I know some of you have heard this, but let me ask you a question, Jerry. Suppose you call your friend Terrell every day up in New York City. You talk to him, and you talk to him every day. You tell me he's your good friend, and you talk to him almost, yeah, I do. I talk to him every day. And Terrell's got a friend across town, that's Lebanese, and he calls him and he talks to him every day. He's in a TV repairman, and he talks to him every day. And the TV repairman Lebanese guy, he talks to one of his friends every day that happens to be from Syria, good friends, and they talk every day. And that guy, who's the Syrian, he talks to his Iranian buddy every day. who happens to be a member of an Al-Qaeda cell. You are now part of this web.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah,
and
right.
You had nothing to do with it, but you can bet your hind end that you're going to be listened in on because...
Well, exactly. I have a very good friend that I've known for over 20 years, to be quite honest with you. It's a woman that I used to work with, and she's a very, very nice person, a very good friend. And she's married to a man from Palestine, and he's an American citizen. He's been in this country for a long time. He's a very, very, very nice man. I like him very much. And ever since all this has been going on, I still call her periodically, but I've always been very guarded with what I've ever said to her because I've been afraid to really say too much. And I've noticed when I call, there's this very, very strong echo on her phone. Mm. And I've noticed this ever since 911. And I recently went down to San Francisco and visited her. And I mentioned it to her, and she goes, "You're kidding." This was before the whole thing broke, you know,
yeah,
the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she goes, "You mean to tell me that you think that our phone lines are being listened in on?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And she says, "Well, my God, I never heard anybody say this before." And I said, "Well, haven't you noticed that every time I've even emailed you, I never say much in it?"
Yeah.
And she goes, "Well, I did kind of notice that." And I said, "Yeah." I said, I just feel like, you know, they're spying on you. And she goes, "Oh, my God," you know. And she had no idea.
Did you
no
ever
idea.
Think? Did you?
Never even thought about it.
No. I mean, 10 years ago, would you have dreamed that this would be happening? I got this paper here. AT&T deploys government spy gear on WorldNet Network. They built secret rooms. AT&T built secret rooms hidden deep in the bowels of its central offices in various cities, housing computer gear for a government spy operation, which taps into the company's popular WorldNet service and the entire Internet.
I'll tell you one thing. I don't even like to email anybody with the AT&T email address. I will admit it.
Wow.
I mean, I'm serious. I mean, I have a brother that's got one. My aunt has one. And I feel like not even emailing them anymore just because, you know, I feel I was going to email them and tell them to please get yourself another server or something, you know?
I have an email. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Then I'll email you maybe, you know?
I was going to, I wanted to read you. Let me see here if I can. I get so many emails. I wanted to read one you know what I did? I started up my printer by accident. But where is this doggone letter I wanted to read to you here? I won't be able to find it. Anyway, somebody that I regularly get email from wrote to me and said, "I've been trying to send you emails about this certain subject, and every time I mention it, it doesn't go through." And he said it was odd. It's never happened before because it was a story about NSA.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And let me see here. Is this it? No, that's not it. Well, anyway, I thought I thought I was going to find it, but I'm not. Yeah.
It sure does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. Okay, here we go. "I have made several efforts to send a couple of emails entitled Court Martial General Hayden and Welcome to the Police State. Both have repeatedly bounced back with some kind of automated explanation about Sector 5 policy reasons, whatever the hell that means. I'm trying not to be paranoid, but both of these messages were about the NSA itself. I'd like to know if either of these messages got through to anyone." Well, they didn't get through to me. So, you know, what is that about? And this is,
I don't know.
This
that's
is about
something that's been going on with my aunt that I mentioned to you that has AT&T as her internet server. Everything I send to her comes back to me, and it says it's being returned for abuse and for it being an inflammatory message. Now, I'll tell you something. The very last person in the world that I would ever send an inflammatory message to, or even with any kind of swear words in it, would be my aunt that's almost 80 years old.
Wow.
Okay?
Amazing.
I mean, you know, it's just so disgusting. I can't believe it, you know? Mm. And as for gas, I'll tell you something. Where I'm living, just out a little while ago, price was $3.59 a gallon.
Oh,
Oh, is right, you know?
Oh, is right.
$3.59 a gallon, and that was the cheap stuff.
Oh, man.
That was not premium or the next grade up or anything.
That's the worst I've heard.
Well, I know. I just, you know, it was actually a little bit higher for a few days, and then it went down a few cents. But it's just ridiculous, and it is having an impact on the economy where I live because I go out driving. There's nobody out on the freeways.
Certainly. Yes, it's having
nobody.
A very
big
effect.
I mean, we're talking maybe just a few cars.
Sure. Sure.
So I don't know how long, I don't know how much longer this is going to be able to keep going, you know?
Yeah, the people fill their tanks up to go to work and so forth, but like I heard somebody else say, at the end of the month, there's no money left in that billfold for them to go out to eat, to go to the movies, to go do this, to go to the little retail mom-pa stores. That's where it's hurting.
Yeah, it is. And then, the thing is, too, is they say that, the only people that it's affecting is just the gasoline, and that's it. That's not at all true. It's not the effective cost of food. They have to ship it in.
Right, right.
And so then the prices on all the groceries are going up really high where I'm living.
They are here as well.
I could not believe it. I was in this just yesterday I was out, and something that I almost buy every single time I go in there, the price had gone up on it by 30%.
Yeah.
In 1 week.
Yeah.
1 week, okay? And it's like, well, I guess that's out. I guess I won't be buying any more of that.
Right.
Pretty soon you're down to the point of, well, what are you going to buy? You
know, how much are the dry beans and the cheap macaroni and cheese?
I'll tell you, it is. It's really having a very, very bad effect. It's affecting everybody in this country. It
yes.
doesn't matter who you are. It's a very bad situation.
It is indeed.
And it's obscene. That is obscene. I mean, as far as Janet Jackson and her nipple, I could care less about that.
Exactly.
And then to have to think they're talking—that's the topic in this. You know, I can't believe it.
Sure.
They need to get their policies.
Well, maybe they will once
reorganized or something. You know, I don't know. I'm a little bit pessimistic about all of it right now. Both sides of the barrel.
So am I.
What I'm saying.
So am I.
I don't have a lot of hope either which way. You know. But I don't know. I mean, I guess you have to hang on though and cling to hope anyway.
That's right.
You have to, you know. Yeah, it's Jesse Jackson says, you know, keep hope alive, you know, and that is so very true.
It springs eternal.
Yeah. Well, anyway, guys, I didn't want to take up too much of your time.
Hey, thanks for a great call, and I'm sorry about that $3.59.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, I didn't buy any, believe me, you know.
Well, take care.
It's going, you know. I thought, well, when I get down to three-quarters of a, you know, a quarter of a tank left, I'll maybe put in a few bucks worth.
Back in the old days when we were kids and threw in $2 worth. Remember that?
Oh, hell. I remember I had a Volkswagen when I was growing up, you know, when I was a teenager. I remember we used to drive into the gas station and you'd buy a dollar's worth of gas.
Mm-hmm.
And you could drive around all day.
Oh, yeah.
All night. cruise the main strip of town. And
that's right.
Whatever. And I remember the gas wars, too. I sure do, you know, and I mean, it just isn't that same world anymore at all.
No.
It breaks my heart, really, you know?
It does.
Because that's the America that I grew up living in and the America that I love.
And the America no one's ever going to know again.
Well, I suppose not, you know, but I can only hope that maybe a new America will emerge and that maybe it'll be a better America than we ever remembered.
Yeah.
That's possible, too, you know, Guy? You got to hang on to those kind of thoughts, I think, you know?
That's right.
Hope that things will get better and that they... Well, one thing that we do know is that things will change.
That's a fact.
That's guaranteed. There will be change no matter what.
And we just got to push them. Got to push the change in the direction that we need.
That's exactly right. You know, and do whatever you can to help, you know, promote it, you know.
Well, that's what we're here for.
That's what I'm trying to do anyway.
Yep.
The best I can. And I don't know how effective I am at it, but I try. And that's, if everybody tried, things would change.
Absolutely.
They would change quickly, too, you know.
The apathy is our worst enemy.
I know. Well, I'm not apathetic. I do what I can. You know, it's hard for me sometimes, but I keep going anyway, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, hey, anyway. Thanks so much for your call. It was a good call, and do call us again.
Yeah, I sure will, Guy. Take care of yourself, okay?
Bye-bye.
And I'm really glad you got back on the air, by the way.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
359. Ow. 359. I was... had tears in my eyes at the 291 at the pump this morning. 359. Yikes. Man, oh man, oh man. 359. Yeah. Hey, by the way, I did get this deal here from our folks at Common Dreams News Center. AT&T deploys government spy gear on WorldNet Network. In 2003, AT&T built secret rooms hidden deep in the bowels of its central offices in various cities, housing computer gear for a government spy operation which taps into the company's popular WorldNet service and the entire Internet. These installations enable the government to look at every individual message on the Internet and analyze exactly what people are doing. Documents show the hardware installation in San Francisco suggests that there are similar locations being installed in numerous other cities. Well, now that's just some handy-dandy information right there to have, isn't it? That's from former AT&T technician Mark Klein, the key witness in the Electronic Frontier Foundation's class action lawsuits against the company, which alleges that AT&T illegally cooperated in an illegal National Security Agency domestic surveillance program. Oh, my God. Careful what you write in those emails, boys and girls. What's going to be next? Now, lots of us send things in email. I mean, I don't have any subversive activity going on. I don't know anybody that does. Don't know any anarchists. Don't know any communists, I don't think, that are trying to bring down the government. I don't know, let me see. I don't know anybody from Al-Qaeda. I don't know anybody from the Mujahideen, the M.E.K. I just don't know. You know, I must lead a pretty doggone boring life because I don't know any of those folks. But I do get mountains and mountains of email every day. And it may be being read by people. And if you are out there, and if you are reading my email, and if you enjoy reading email that my enemies have signed me up for about getting 100 emails a day for Viagra and Cialis and Levitra and those, and the all the ones about the hardcore pornography, another 100 of those a day, and of course the penny stock ones, another 100 of those a day. If you enjoy reading those, I don't know what to tell you. and you would enjoy reading all the good ones I get from all my friends that listen to the program, because they're quite interesting. We get some great email from folks who listen to the program. I really do. My word, what an interesting conversation that was. Hey, our good friend, somebody we all love and respect for his good judgment, for his military genius, and somebody who George Bush loves because he's probably one of the greatest ass-kissers of all time, General Tommy Franks. Salute, everybody. All together, click your heels and salute. In Milwaukee, those who count the increasing number of American soldiers killed in Iraq are missing the bigger picture, retired General Tommy Franks said Saturday night. To quote him, what we're talking about is neither 2,400, 24,000, or 240,000 lives, Frank said at the National Rifle Association annual banquet. He went on to say, terrorism is a thing that threatens our way of life. It doesn't have anything to do with politics. More than 2,400 soldiers have died since the beginning of the invasion of Iraq, the plan for which Franks developed and executed. He also oversaw combat in Afghanistan after September 11, 2001 terrorist attack. You know, right there, if we had any kind of a leader whatsoever in the White House, any kind, can you imagine Harry Truman knowing what Harry Truman did with General MacArthur, the great hero? Can you imagine Harry Truman Or, if you know your history, can you imagine Abraham Lincoln putting up with a general with the competence of a Tommy Franks? Never mind his politics. Never mind his big mouth talking about soldiers dying. It really doesn't matter a hell of a lot, which is what he's saying here. Never mind all that. He planned and oversaw the war in Iraq. He developed and executed the plan for, with which we used to invade Iraq. That alone would earn you a court-martial under an Abraham Lincoln or a Harry Truman. Maybe not a court-martial. You'd just get busted down and kicked the hell out and go sent to an office someplace in some faraway place. But you would not. You would not retire getting a special honor from the President of the United States in the White House along with who? George Tenet and who else was it? I forget. The guy that was over there in Iraq for so long. Another ass-kisser for Bush. Tommy Frank, the man that planned and executed the Iraq War, the man that allowed the likes of Donald Rumsfeld to tell him, a lifelong military man, a four-star general, had a civilian with no expertise in the situation whatsoever. Tommy Franks, this so-called honorable man, allowed Donald Rumsfeld to run over him like a Mack truck and tell Frank how he was going to run the war, and Frank did it. What kind of a man would allow that? What kind of a United States general would allow that to happen and surrender his honor, to give up his honor, maybe honor he'd learned in a lifetime of military service of this country? He chucked it all when he allowed Donald Rumsfeld to make a monkey out of him. And he gets a special award from the president. Franks went on to say at this dinner, I watched as America changed. That's not near done. We have to secure ourselves. We have to secure our Constitution. Oh, my God. We've got Gonzales and Bush and Senator Roberts and plenty of others willing to help shred the Constitution of the United States. And we have General Tommy Franks out saying we have to secure our Constitution. What Constitution is that he's talking about? Is that the one that Gonzales and Bush are going to write, the new one? Is that the new one we're going to have without the First and Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, maybe missing a few others besides? Is it that Constitution they're talking about? By the Bushes, of the Bushes, and for the Bushes? Is it that one? I read this thing from Tommy about Tommy Franks, and I'm appalled. You know, during his 30-minute speech, Franks took an occasional jab at the media and fellow generals for attacking Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, his pal. He said, and I quote, "We haven't got any generals here. They're all in front of TV cameras complaining about Donald Rumsfeld," Frank's deadpan. "Difference is, I know what I'm talking about." Au contraire, General Frank, I think not. "And I think the proof is in the pudding, pal, that you don't have a damn idea in the world of what you're talking about." Are you, General Frank, willing to call this Iraq war a success? Are you, General Frank, willing to say the 2,400, almost 2,500 people who have died wearing an American uniform have died for any kind of a cause at all? Are you saying that that's true? Ye who said this war would be over in no time? Ye who did not send enough troops in there? Ye who allowed Donald Rumsfeld to run this war? I would submit, Tommy Franks, that you're the last guy who should stand up in front of any organization and say that you know what you're talking about, because you don't know crap. And you've proven it. I'm not guessing that. That's not my opinion. You have proven it to me and to the world that you don't know your ass in a hole in the ground, from a hole in the ground, about running a war, about bringing home troops home, bringing them home safe, about properly equipping them to go into a war with the right body armor and the right vehicles to save their lives. You have proven you know nothing about that. And you know what's worse, General Franks? You have proven you didn't care. You didn't care. A general, a military man, willing to send his men to the slaughter when he knew that they weren't properly equipped. He knew it. He knew it from the get-go. He knew it. Rumsfeld knew it. Bush knew it. And Cheney knew it. I know what I'm talking about. You disgust me. I'm sorry. I shouldn't get worked up about things, but that just literally disgusts me. Something on a lighter note. Someone sent me this. They were talking about American Idol and how it wove itself into politics. That on American Idol, it's based on a semblance of ability. That's not to say the most talented singers always win on Idol. And here's the good part. Then again, William Hung never made it to the finals. But George Bush did. It's funny, and it's not. Let's look at the lighter side of it anyway. And, of course, we have the story that comes up today about our good friend, Richard Pearl, meeting, let me see if I've got this straight here. Does this story sound familiar to you? Another time with another name in another place. Fugitive pleads with U.S. to liberate Iran. Do you remember fugitive pleads with U.S. to liberate Iraq? You remember that? And you remember Shalaby? And you remember Richard Pearl in on that? Is this all starting to come together for you now? For almost 8 months, Amir Fakhrizadeh was held in solitary confinement in a soundproof cell in Iran, and he goes on to tell about his solitary confinement. He surfaced at the end of last month in Dubai, where 24 hours later he was met by leading American neoconservative Richard Pearl. Does someone want to tell me what Richard Pearl is doing in Dubai? Richard Pearl, mind you, is a private citizen now, no longer a member of the United States government, no longer an employee of the government. A private citizen. Of course, he probably still is a member of the PNAC group. But here he is in Dubai meeting with this fellow from Iran who has been treated badly. And is bringing him to Washington, and they're going to plead his case to congressmen and Bush officials. Does this not sound familiar? Isn't this exactly what happened in the Iran war? They found somebody. They brought him over here in Shalabi and all. Oh, man, it's really bad. It's really bad. You got to go to war. You got to go to war against Iraq. And we'll, and you know, and they did. And let's go back even a little further. Do you remember the little girl and her father and her mother from Kuwait testifying in front of Congress about how all the babies were killed I can't think. All of a sudden, I'm having one of those brain things. Can't think. But in the hospital, in the maternity ward, where all the babies were, the little girl and their mother and all came before Congress and testified how the Iraqis came in and killed all the babies and all the mothers and all that. And you know why they did that? That was in order to get the United States Congress on the side of war against Saddam Hussein. Turns out it was all a lie. Never happened. And now we have this one with our good friend Richard Pearl involved once again. My, oh my, oh my. How many times do we have to see these same names coming up again and again and again before we finally understand? I guess more times than I want to count. I had so much more I wanted to talk about today that I'm obviously not going to get to. I've got some good mail to read to you tomorrow. I was going to do that today. I've got some great mail to read to you tomorrow that I got from some of our good friends. They talk about how things really are in the political life and character. That word that's been bandied about again, character. You know, I mentioned it last week in an article about the Gail Sheehy, I believe his name was. You know, the article provided an insight that really at this point seems rather prophetic. She said in that article that even if he loses, his friends say he doesn't lose. He just changes the score, changes the rules, or makes his opponent play until he can beat him. If you were playing basketball and you were playing to 11 and he was down, he'd say, okay, we're going to play to 15. Doug Hanna, who was a friend of his, who's a Dallas insurance executive right now, talking about Bush, said if he wasn't winning, he would quit. He would just walk off. It's what we call Bush effort. If I don't like the game, I take my ball and I go home. Very few people can get away with that. You know, one of the things that just mystified me back in the 2000 presidential campaign was that no one in the press was willing to point out that Junior Bush had no character. It became painfully clear that no one in the Washington press corps was willing to talk about George Bush's his absolute ruthlessness and his unwillingness to win or lose by the rules of the game. That didn't seem to raise a character question in the minds of the press at all. Instead, they looked at the guy Al Gore, who made it abundantly clear that he was going to abide by the rules, to play fairly and squarely at every turn, and they derided him and called him a wimp because of it. And then there was Bush's trifecta joke, in which all of Bush's character flaws came right to the front. You remember that? Most economic sources of the huge Bush deficit talked about his Bush tax cut plan, the worst parts of which are still to come. The administration denies this, yet it's clear that while September 11th may have deepened and broadened the budget deficit problem because of their massive tax cuts, the administration was faced with chronic budget deficits no matter what because of their tax cuts. And yet it gets to the heart of that trifecta joke, whose entire purpose clearly was to blame the deficit on September 11th and its aftermath. You remember that. This cute little joke allowed Bush to escape any serious questions about either his failure to balance the budget or particularly his campaign pledge to use the Social Security Trust Fund to pay down the national debt. The horrible 9/11, it gave him the political cover he needed for his administration's failures. And Bush, not to my surprise or to anybody's surprise, has displayed no hesitation whatsoever about using 9/11. And actually, the trifecta joke has become his favorite joke. Never mind, it was probably the most tasteless and insensitive joke in the annals of American history. He used it anyway. He doesn't care. The man has no character. He has no character. None. We'll talk about that again another day. There's plenty of time to talk about Junior Bush having no character. Plenty of ways to prove it as well. So good to have you along with us today. I don't know where the time went. Didn't get half of the material covered I wanted to cover today, but there's always tomorrow. Don't forget and tell all your friends. Greg Palast is going to be with us tomorrow discussing his new book. You will not want to miss that interview. I promise you, it'll be great. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a great one. See you tomorrow, gang.